This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 258. Today, we've interviewed a couple members from the Microsoft Teams team about some of the new features and capabilities that they've announced in May of 2018. Recorded live, May the 31st, 2018.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, and maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery from individual items to entire sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com.
Hello, everybody. This is AC. I am flying solo for this intro part of the interview here. Last week, the last few episodes, we published a handful of episodes from the SharePoint conference that was in Las Vegas the week of May the 21st. We talked to Adam Harmet, Dan Holm, Omar Shahin, and a bunch of the people from the SharePoint developer experience team, such as Pat Miller, Darren Spector, Kathy Dew, Luca Bandinelli, and Jeremy Kelly. All of those episodes published as episodes 255, 256, and 257 can all be heard in our show, as well as if you go to our Facebook page, we stream them live to Facebook as well. And prior to that, a couple weeks prior to the SharePoint conference, was the Microsoft Build conference. And at that show, my co-host Chris Johnson sat down with multiple teams to interview them about some of the latest and greatest stuff that they had been announcing recently. Two interviews that we have yet to been able to play because we've frankly just been having a load of great interviews that we've done recently with some really generous people from Microsoft is with the individuals involved with the Microsoft Teams team product. And they had a bunch of stuff that they wanted to share. So that's the interview that we're going to roll today. As CJ and I, this week, the week following the SharePoint conference, we've been both quite busy cleaning stuff up and getting caught up from being out of the office. And there's a bit more stuff that's been going on as well that we'll talk to CJ about next week in next week's episode 259, where if you didn't pick up on the news that was scattered about Twitter and Facebook, was that CJ's company, Hyperfish, was acquired at the end of the SharePoint conference or at the end of that week by a very popular company called LiveTiles. So I'm going to talk to CJ a little bit about, you know, what that means for Hyperfish, what customers can look at, what the community can look at, and kind of what it means to CJ as well going forward. Nothing changes with the podcast, though. I just thought it'd be something that'd be kind of interesting to folks if they wanted to tune in. So for now, why don't you just take a sit back and let's see, hear what's latest and greatest from the Microsoft Teams group.
Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes and with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focusing on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, workflows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/try-NWC.
All right, so I'm back at Build with two guys that work on Microsoft Teams. So welcome to Build and welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, guys.
Thanks for having us.
So Larry, you're a Microsoft, you're working on Teams. Why don't you tell our audience a little bit about what you do at Microsoft and what they will be aware of that that you may be responsible for?
Sure thing, yeah. So I'm Larry Jin, and I'm a PM manager on Microsoft Teams. And I'm responsible for the extensibility area of the product. So specifically building or bringing your integration into Teams via bot, connector, tab, cards, and really having that sort of rich developer canvas. So that's the area that I'm directly responsible for. And we had a lot of great, exciting announcements at Build this year. So happy to dig into that a little more deeply as we go along.
Perfect. I'm sure people will be fascinated to hear more about that stuff. But first, Andrew.
Yeah, so Andrew Bybee, lead on our developer platform efforts, working with Larry on the extensibility side and also on our work around APIs and services. And, been again, lots of exciting things that we're talking about on the services front and how that fits together to help people build out solutions. So
excellent, excellent. Well, so why don't we kick things off with just a quick sort of, a review of what's new at Build this week. We saw lots of news in the keynote, lots of buzz on the expo floor about Teams and extensibility as well with, you know, things going into tabs and bots and all sorts of new bits and pieces. So why don't we kick things off with just a quick recap of, like, what are the big things landing this week at Build?
Yeah. There's a few things, actually, probably to point out, and I would say one of them is around some new experiences that we have. And so, you know, it was interesting to me. So we announced a new version of Teams for Win 10S. So it's a UWP app that's running in the environment, comes through Microsoft Store, has native integration, you know, starts to leverage some of the PWA tech that we're sort of positioning on there. And it was really fascinating to me because I actually saw that pop really high in some of the new stuff.
Like, we were at the booth as well. They asked us about that, or like, when's it coming to Surface Hub was the other question.
Exactly. So we love that story. I think it's a great, you know, Windows Better Together story with Teams. So that's one part. Remote Assist is another Teams experience that we've talked about. So that's a big story on the HoloLens, but it's powered by Teams services and works with the Teams client on the backside, but it brings in the Unity engine and all the annotations and everything in MR. So it's very, very exciting stuff. And what's interesting about that is those are just like two of the experiences that we're also working on. And then on top of that, we have all the other sort of developer stuff. So I think with the developer story, you know, there's really sort of two areas that we talked about. And then maybe Larry can talk about sort of the first one, which is around, there's a really new set of developer canvas capabilities we've talked about. And Larry can probably jump in on that. And then the second one was really around how we start to build tailored apps for the enterprise.
Right, gotcha.
And we can talk maybe a little bit about that, but maybe you want to jump in on some of the extensibility pieces.
Yeah, we've always done, I think, a pretty good job at bringing together these different types of experiences to allow developers to integrate their application, their service, their content into Teams. As you may be aware, you know, we've got tabs where you can go and view and collaborate on content. We've got conversational bots where you can, you know, interact back and forth and get tasks done conversationally. They can return rich cards. New to this year at Build, we've got a bunch of great announcements. One is that you can now bring apps into private chats. And so previously, you could only interact with an app sort of directly, privately.
Just
or
one-to-one.
You can interact, or you can interact in a team. You can bring your tabs and your bots into Teams. But, you know, we get a ton of engagement in Teams just in regular chat. So people use it like just a modern messaging client for one-on-one and group chats. If you need to quickly ping someone or get a bunch of people together and have a conversation. Now, the ability to bring apps into that context will help facilitate, you know, productivity and efficiency. So, you know, one of the examples that I really like is we have a partner called Soapbox, and their business is all around sort of employee engagement. And one of their products is facilitating interactions between managers and direct reports.
Gotcha.
And so when you think about that one-on-one chat relationship in Teams, that's a perfect example of a context where you want to be able to plug in a tool like Soapbox and facilitate that, you know, manager and direct report relationship. So that's one new feature that we're bringing online that's going to be coming to developer preview very soon. Another really big one. This one, a lot of people are talking about this year is adaptive cards. So, you know, adaptive is this great new interactive card framework that's available across the slew of Microsoft canvases. So be it in Windows, Outlook, Cortana, and now Teams supports adaptive cards. So you can create these really rich interactive layouts, card layouts, whether it's from your bot or your connector or through messaging extensions, and have those appear consistently in Teams as they would in these other clients.
Right.
And so we've got some really great examples of that. And we're really excited about the opportunities and the flexibility that's going to bring for our developers. And it's going to be fully supported on our Teams mobile clients. So if you're developing a bot and you want it, people to be able to use it on the go on iOS and Android, that's going to be available. So those are two big announcements. We've got other new features like the ability for bots to send and receive files. That's something that several folks have asked about. Huh. So maybe you have an expense report related scenario, the ability for you to upload your image to the bot and then have it maybe do some OCR, send back like a PDF or an annotated file. Let's see what else. I feel like I'm missing a bunch of other ones, too. There's so many announcements.
There's a bunch of things that we talked about that were like either they're coming soon or they're getting rolled out.
Right.
And so, yeah, it was interesting when we were doing our session on Monday. You know, we had this whole 75-minute session. You get to the end, you had one slide that kind of summarized everything that was in there. We showed it, and we walked to the end, and everybody's like, wait, can you go back three slides? And everybody's like pulling out their cameras and
just to recap,
wanting to take photos and stuff.
But I think the really big one is around the sort of tailoring, custom tailoring your teams And I think primarily, and Andy, feel free to speak to this, I think there's two angles to it. One is around packaging and distributing your custom app. So you know, if you've built an app for your organization specifically, whether it's a employee tool, it could be something for sales, for marketing, for developers, being able to package and distribute that. And the second piece is the ability to automate your workflows using the Graph APIs for team-specific functionality. So you know, Andy, feel free to chime in on those two.
Yeah, no, I think there's a couple of places that were interesting. You know, if you look at kind of the last year, right? So teams celebrated our, you know, 1 year birthday in March. It's been interesting because it's been a lot about how you start to surface content and start to participate in conversations with bots. But I think now what we're starting to look at, one of the other ones that we didn't, we talked a lot about was SharePoint integration. Yep. And as we think about how you're now using SharePoint and Teams together, or as you start to think about, we sort of did a sneak peek around voice and video APIs that are coming in. And so if you've been in the UC space, a lot of demand from that. We've been having a bunch of theater sessions that have been very, very popular with folks. So as we're getting into this situation where it's now no longer just about how you surface and connect the content, but it's how are you actually really driving the interaction and doing it in a way that sort of works across the organization.
Yeah, that's bots are all the rage right now, right? Mm-hmm. But they only go so far.
Right.
And to be honest, I would never go to a bot to book a flight. That's just me personally.
Right.
Like, I just don't trust them. I want to know I've got all the options correct, and I get to review everything, and then I get to hit the buy button, right?
Yep.
So bots, for me, no go for flights.
Yeah.
There's just the correct use cases for different people and different audiences and different mediums, right? And bots seem great for certain tasks and not great for others. And
that's
so the announcements that you guys have made around integration of pieces of SharePoint and the SharePoint extensibility model and things like with SPFX and stuff, and surfacing those inside Teams is really compelling, I think, because not everything... You know, not everything goes into a round hole,
right?
A square peg doesn't fit in a round hole, and jamming everything into a bot doesn't seem so cool to me. So, but being able to get out into a full sort of richer user experience and model with tabs and all of that sort of richness that comes through seems very, it just makes sense.
Yeah, so
it's also about, I think, building more successful apps, honestly, because you know, as we see people adopting Teams, part of the reason we talk about this tailoring your teamwork thing, which, yes, it's kind of a positioning thing, but it's true, because ultimately you put people into this environment, and the question is like, what do you do with it? And so the more you can start to bring in the tools and the assets that people are, you know, wanting to see there, the more successful they're going to be with that app. So looking at SharePoint, if I've already got a bunch of investments in SharePoint web parts, it just totally makes sense that I should be able to bring those parts into the conversations that are going to be using those things.
Definitely,
So I just, there's a bunch of value that I think we're seeing from customers being able to start sort of being, you know, much more targeted about what is a channel experience supposed to be like? What content do I want to see? What tools do I want to see? Yes, I don't want to book a flight, but I totally want to be able to check something into a repo, right? And I want to be able to see if the build's done. I want to be able to get an alert, right?
Sure.
There's a bunch of these types of flows that I think make, you know, make sense.
Yeah, they definitely. I think coming from quite a heavy SharePoint background in my past, you know, one thing I think developers are going to get really excited about with the integration between the two is what was typically had to be delivered via an intranet or in a browser can now be surfaced in a tool that the users already are in.
Yeah.
And it's just an ask, but like an intranet tab in Teams would be awesome. So I don't have to pick which team I'm in. I'm in an org, right?
Yeah.
I want to go to the org's kind of a set of apps and stuff right from within Teams and not have to go open a browser to get there.
Well,
a lot of it might just be web stuff that's surfaced in there, but I'm already there, right?
So so I think we've got the beginnings of a very good story there. If we think about, I'm glad you mentioned the SharePoint piece. So if you look at SharePoint as a developer platform, a way to build these compelling page experiences, and you know we have a lot of developers that over the years have you know, we've created this ecosystem with SharePoint. And then on the other side, new tools and capabilities for enterprise devs to go and package and publish those within Teams. Now you have a story where you can repurpose and take your existing investments, like Andy said, in the SharePoint framework, take those existing web parts, take those existing pages, package them up as Teams apps, Teams solutions, publish them through the Teams store, and now what we announced to build is exactly what you said. said, you go to the store experience in Teams, and there's a category for your company.
I see.
And it's all the apps that your company has published, and it's the one that you would care about as an employee.
So it's sort of a private store,
exactly.
So to speak.
Exactly. Yeah. So that enterprise catalog of apps, we think it opens up, it's certainly something we've been hearing a lot from organizations that are past the initial evaluation stage, and they're like, okay, we want to roll this out.
Right.
We've got a bunch of things that we want to make available, but we don't want them to use some of those public store things. We just want to control what they can get access to. So,
yeah, and private solutions they've built for themselves as well, right?
Exactly. And I think there's some that are going to be custom, and then there's a bunch that people have built for SharePoint.
Yep.
And so whether it's the Pages, and so the SharePoint Pages app that's out now, or the web parts that we demoed, you know, that ability to take those assets, the corporate apps, the corporate pages, the things that you want to build, and to be able to do that through the enterprise store now just opens up a very sort of, I think, streamlined path towards, you know, what we think about as sort of the democratization of IT, right? As a Microsoft thing all up. Making it super easy for people to kind of build the team experiences that they want, they need. I think that opens up a bunch of opportunities there.
Definitely. And I guess, you know, lots of folks that are listening to the show come from a SharePoint background, mm-hmm. an office background particularly, and they're probably sitting there going, cool, so now I've got a SharePoint app catalog, a Teams catalog.
Keep going.
Yep.
I got, what else have I got? There's a bunch of places you stick these things.
Don't forget all the office add-ins that we're super excited about, and the new custom Excel functions.
There's all that sort of stuff.
Right. Yeah.
So is there some... I'm guessing at some point some of these things are going to come together.
Please tell me there's a plan there or something, right?
Yeah, exactly. Please tell me I'm not going to have to submit different parts of my app to five different places.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of different pieces there. Yes, there is a plan there. You know, some of it we're still, I think, in early stages in formulating. But, you know, there's I think we want to make sure we're getting sort of the best of both worlds. Mm-hmm. The best of both worlds is I don't necessarily want to have to think about every single possible canvas area just to try and build a custom, you know, function for Excel. At the same time, if I'm, you know, a large organization, if I'm an Adobe, right? Adobe has a value prop across the entire set of things that I'm doing. Mm. And so we want to make sure that we can kind of cover both of those ends of the spectrums, right? The custom function all the way up to the major commercial ISV.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, part of the advantage of having a sort of more specific packaging format for different canvases helps us to sort of maintain that kind of support for granularity.
Mm.
And then part of the challenge is just how do you now start to bring that together so that if you're an IT pro, you're trying to manage, hey, how does everybody in my organization or my design team get Adobe? I can do that in a consistent way and not have to learn seven different, you know, sort of things to, oh, publish here, then publish there, then register this, then do that, and then... whatever. So we're definitely moving towards that. I think we'll have more to talk about as we get into the fall, as we get into Ignite.
Sure.
But it's, there's thought going on.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
Well, even if the plan is not done, it's nice to know there's a plan.
There is a plan for a plan at the very least.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and I guess that also stretches to things like, you know, identity across solutions and stuff, right? Teams is very tied to Azure AD and your identity in the cloud and things like that. And, you know, identity is kind of a struggle across all custom solutions. Doesn't really matter what you're building. The first hurdle you always get to is authentication,
right?
Anything to sort of share around, especially in bots, right? Bots, I despise bots that make me sign into them.
Right.
And it just seems like friction that shouldn't exist. Like, I'm already signed into an app.
Yeah.
And I would like it to say, this thing wants to get access to these things, right? Consent to certain stuff.
Yeah.
But it seems really weird that I've got to pop up boxes and sign into stuff and do things like that.
Yeah.
When I'm already signed into an experience or when a company has already sort of rolled out an app to me as well, they've already consented on my behalf a lot of the time. So sort of where do you think things are going around identity in your space, especially as from a dev platform point of view, and what can we kind of expect to see investments being made-wise?
Yeah, so I'll answer that in kind of a couple of different angles. You know, I think the first is from an IT administrator's perspective, you know, there is this class of use cases where, you know, you want an application to not only be enabled for your end users, but you want it to be sort of pre-consented, pre-authorized.
Yeah.
And you don't want users to have to go through the additional friction of consent and authorization. So, you know, that's something that we are working on. And I think in the realm of governance and policy, you're going to be seeing some improvements there so that we can streamline that delivery and that last mile to the end user so they don't have to go and think about installing and configuring and authorizing. On the developer side, you know, as we invest more in the graph and as we make graph kind of the single sort of fundamental data access layer for all these different applications, we're also going to see a little bit more harmony in terms of how your bot or your tab, if it needs to access those resources, can do so in a much more integrated and seamless way.
Gotcha.
Whether it's through, you know, single sign-on or a single sort of consent experience. We've already started actually down that journey with some of our built-in apps. So on the tab side, for Planner, OneNote, and a couple of these other Microsoft-built workloads, you actually don't have to sign in ever. And you'll notice that when you use them, it just signs you in and it just works.
Gotcha.
On the bot side, similarly with Who, which is our a bot we developed to help you look up people within your organization, that one also doesn't have any kind of pop-up window experience. And so, you know, these are some, we've made these solutions work for sort of these first-party, quote-unquote, Azure Active Directory applications, but what you're going to see is bringing that and making that available to third-party developers as well, so they can tap into that same seamless kind of integrated authentication authorization experience.
No, that's awesome, because it's, you know, it's a hurdle that gets thrown up. It's the first, you only get one first experience, right? And you want it to be awesome. So it's great to hear.
The other thing I'd add there, I would say, is that when you're dealing with, you know, bringing content into a client experience, you definitely run into all of these types of problems. And so I think the work we're doing there is I think, really going to help move the experience forward. In addition to that, as we look on the services side, like when we talk about like the audio video bots, for example, it's not just about having an audio video bot. It's actually about starting to understand that some of these audio video bots, as we look forward, are really trusted applications in and of themselves. And so, in fact, what we're looking at is not only ways that you are effectively designating that thing as a highly privileged thing, right? So this is my recording service that's going to listen on every single phone call in my entire company.
Right.
That's a very highly privileged type of a service. But on top of that, there's a set of things that we do even today in Skype for Business Online that we're going to be extending for Teams, which is basically giving those services identity in the organization. So, you know, typically you say, hey, I've got an Azure ID, like that's my bot ID. But then being able to now have that bot show up as the back end for, hey, support at contoso.com.
Gotcha.
Right? And so now, like, you've got an endpoint. Now, in Skype for Business Online, the way we do that is you're actually assigning a phone number to that thing. So you might have the same service that's, you know, answering phone number one, phone number two, phone number three. As we look forward, we see that as a similar opportunity to be able to do for voice and calling bots with inside of Teams, which is that you can, in fact, give that service discrete identities inside of the organization. And that actually now says that that service has its own access to your tenant data without having to prompt for consent or, you know, any sort of sign-in. And it's what you want to be able to share out to that data. So the on behalf of model is important. The privileged or sort of trusted application model is important. And when you put them together, we think it starts to really sort of unlock some interesting patterns. But these are, like I said, these are parts of the model that we're just now starting to sort of, you know, put into place. And so hopefully as we get later into the calendar year, people will see a lot more of that stuff.
Gotcha. Yeah, so on that topic, there's really two pieces to that, right? There's the API side and getting access to all the data and, and pushing and pulling and all that stuff that you need to do. I'd love to dive into that in a little more detail in a second. But then there's also like the permissions and scopes and all that sort of stuff. So for our audience, they're probably used to Azure AD scopes and all that sort of stuff. So when you say, you know, on behalf of, it's kind of like delegated access. Is that what you mean? And then on the sort of the more trusted and deeper privileged level stuff, is that more like the client credential flow and app only, admin consent?
It's like app only consent. And then I think part of the work that we're doing is also looking at how we rationalize scopes and authorization flows. So there's a set of scopes that you want to be able to do in Azure Active Directory, and you want to consent to those, and then you want to, you know, use that as sort of your baseline. As we get into Teams, though, and as you start getting into more granular content and more granular permissions, those don't always necessarily make sense at the app only sort of level scope. And so this is part of the thing we're talking through is you know, what does it look like to then say, okay, this is where it makes sense to have AAD scopes. This is where it makes sense to have specific permissions. So for example, if I want to authorize a bot to interact for a particular team, well, that's not an AAD scope. Like the fact that they can talk to a team is a thing, but this specific team is not something that necessarily makes sense as an AAD scope.
I see.
And so how you sort of put those authorization kind of flows together is part of what we're talking through.
Yeah, I see. That makes sense. I guess it's the same as files, right? You might get access to a site, but you don't necessarily have access to all the folders and files or very granular level
additional ACLs that's sort of a higher level of business logic that has to be applied.
So I mean, you want them to work together.
Yeah, gotcha. So on the graph side, you mentioned it a couple of times, and I believe it's, you know, the sneak peek stuff that you were showing this week around voice and
video.
Video.
Yeah.
Had something to do with the graph. So can we dig into that a little bit? Or
sure.
What's going on there?
So voice and video is an interesting space. That's an understatement, I guess.
It sounds years of history in the making, that quote.
You know, yeah. So you know, voice and video is one of those things that, you know, you can go back to, like, Edison, you know, and sit there and say, like, how long have we been working on voice and video, right?
Yeah,
like getting data over wire has gotten a long time. But I think it's, you know, because of that, you know, all the way up through, like, AT&T monopoly and everything else going on there, it sort of has this history of it being this sort of secret cabal of people that know how to, like, program voice and video and know how to do all this. And then there's everybody else. There's the other 99.5% of the people in the
world.
Does
my phone ring? Can I make a call?
Right.
That's about as far as
it goes.
Yeah.
So what's been interesting for us is with Skype for Business, and even with Skype for Business Online, we were still, you know, primarily targeting that secret cabal of people that know how to deal with voice and video. And so what we've been trying to do when we think about that story in Teams is, you know, starting from Graph and starting from the idea that, hey, we really want this to be something that every organization can start to take advantage of, it means that we're trying to come at it with a slightly different perspective. So A, we want people to think about this not just as, hey, here's the same PBX capability you had, but we want you to start thinking about, like, how do you think about voice and video bots as changing the way that you can have a multimodal interaction inside a team? So don't just chat with the bot, but literally talk with the bot, or be talking with the bot and then use adaptive cards and other sorts of chat content as a way to have an even more productive conversation with that bot. So part of it is just thinking about the model kind of differently. The second one is with Graph. Well, it's really, I think, an important new step in Graph. So Graph, historically, has been very much a data access CRUD type of behavior.
Very restful.
You're talking about, it's very restful.
Yes.
It's very asynchronous. It's very like, hey, here's my puts, here's my posts, here's my gets.
That doesn't work for audio?
So audio video as a real-time protocol, obviously, is a whole thing, and there's SIP, and there's a bunch of standard protocols for how we do that. So what we've been doing is trying to reimagine what does that protocol model look like based off of an asynchronous RESTful model that you would get to from Graph, and that is now consistent with the rest of the models that you have in Graph for identity, for authorization, for notifications, things along those lines. So a lot of the innovation here has been about blending these models. So having a real-time protocol coming through this RESTful asynchronous. Now, some people would say you're crazy for doing that. Why not just do WebSockets? We like to think of this as, you know, it is an opportunity to really land the story of the Microsoft API with Graph and being able to get calls and documents and chats and conversations and people and presence all within a sort of consistent model. So we think that's the second sort of core sort of different way to think about it.
Yeah, gotcha.
The third thing that we're doing that we're showing here is really this notion of what we're calling remote media and direct media. So a lot of the challenge with doing voice and video is that you have literally this PCM audio stream that's coming over the network, and you've got to think about latency and jitter and buffer and blah, blah, blah. That's way more complexity than most people want to deal with. So somewhere in between the, I just want my phone to ring, versus the, like, I'm the 50-year expert in, you know, voice and video over the network, there's this thing in the middle which says, like, I want to write a bot. I want the bot to answer the phone. I want to figure out when somebody presses a button or says something, and then based on what they say, I want to send them to either Chris or to Larry.
Gotcha.
How do I do that? Mm-hmm. And then if I decide that it's Chris, how do I then go and look up some information about Chris and send that down to the client so that when that person's answering, they know what's going on?
Yeah.
So I don't want to get into all this, you know, audio, PCM vagaries, but I do want to make some decisions about what to do with the call.
Gotcha.
And so this notion of remote media basically says, we'll handle all the audio streams for you, and you command us and tell us what you want to do. So you tell us, hey, we'll tell you that there's an incoming call. You say, hey, great, answer the phone and ask for this information. Tell me what information you get collected back, and then I'll tell you what to do next.
Gotcha.
So there's a flow there, there's a process flow there. So being able to do all of those types of things in a fairly straightforward way, we showed a really interesting integration here with a company partner of ours doing some explorations, a company called SingleWire. So they do incident management. You say, what the hell is incident management? So think about it as like something happens in your organization and you need to let a lot of people know what's going on. Now that can range from severe weather to intruder alert to more contentious type things that I won't talk about right here. But they have software that does all of that routing and knows right. who to talk to. But they need to be able to interact and drive these behaviors. Hmm. So if something happens, I need to call both of you. So
gotcha.
Who do I call? How do I place the outbound call? Let you know what's going on.
Hmm.
All of those things are basically now enabled with this work that we're doing in audio video.
Gotcha.
So between the work to sort of take the real-time protocol and bring it into Graph, make it simple, think about how it fits inside of Teams, and then start to unlock some of these scenarios, we think that's going to open up a bunch of opportunity for people. And the fact that it's all integrated as part of 365 means that it simplifies sort of the last piece that people have been starting to do, which is when you see companies like Twilio and others, part of the reason people go there is because, man, if I'm on some ancient PBX, I can't get a number from my ancient PBX. It takes me forever.
Right.
So being able to just come in and quickly say, hey, if I'm a 365 customer, I can quickly set up a call that knows how to call people and do things in real time, whether it's incident management or others, there's just a ton of value that comes from that. So
definitely.
That's a very long answer to a short question. But but ultimately, I think hopefully it gives you a sense of, you know, both the interest and the excitement that I think we're seeing in this particular space.
Yeah, well, that's great to know that's... That's stuff we're going to see more later in the year, it sounds like, as we head towards Ignite and things like that. But that kind of direction and set of investments, both on the API side, the auth side and things, that's really, really interesting. So one of the other things I wanted to talk about is adaptive cards.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned it earlier on, and it's a really interesting topic because it you know, as a bot builder, it is a royal pain in the butt to get stuff to show across different clients. Even within the Teams client across iOS and Android and desktop and browser, with the card types that are available today, it's not always straightforward, let's just say that. So I've noticed adaptive cards coming along for a little while, and I think the first time I looked at it was with Outlook, and it's sort of where it came from, actionable messages in Outlook, and kind of where it's headed towards with Windows and all that subsequently. So do you want to spend some time to talk a little bit about what you're doing with adaptive cards, what it will mean for developers, and kind of some of the experiences we'll see across the different mediums and how things will show up? Because, you know, when I want to build a bot, obviously Teams is kind of where we're going with our bot, but we've got customers that want different channels and different types of things. And we want them all to support adaptive cards, right?
That's
because trying to do, well, it's in this, and we've got support for that in Slack, and this in Teams, and this in Skype for Business, and it's a minefield.
Yeah.
So yeah, why don't we talk a little bit about adaptive cards and where you guys are going with that?
Yeah, I think fundamentally for developers, it's about one, you know, flexibility, richness, and the second is about reach. So on the flexibility side, you know, I worked closely with actually, you know, the group that came up with the initial spec, the initial schema. It was actually a working group across several folks from Outlook, from Windows, from Skype. And really the vision was around taking what we had learned with these different card types, the actionable messages format, the hero and thumbnail card formats from the bot framework, and really unifying it into a single format that could work across these channels. More importantly, gives the flexibility so that you could specify all these custom layouts. And so whether you're talking about text or media or form input, you know, it supports a rich collection of input types like date time picker, multi-select, text input, number sector. And the idea that as a developer, you could send a single uniform piece of JSON that expresses that look and feel and behavior and know that it's going to show up consistently across all these different canvases. And so the way that they did that is that there's actually a standard sort of a set of reference implementations to actually render the card. And there's a set of renderers that have been implemented across web and iOS and Android and all these different platforms. And actually, for Teams, the reason why we've been able to bootstrap so quickly in supporting adaptive cards is because we are using these renderers. Now, we've made improvements to them, and we've worked with the engineers that built them so that we could ensure that they're customized in terms of the look and feel. So one of the principles of adaptive cards is that it's not meant to make it look exactly the same everywhere.
No.
It's really about expressing the sort of semantics and the visual components in a consistent way, but it's not necessarily prescribing what color things should be or exactly, you know, how it should respond to layout changes. And so that's really up to each of the different hosts or each of the different canvases to decide. So it still gives that flexibility for, you know, Skype and Windows and Outlook and Teams to kind of manifest them the way they need to. But as a developer, you know that it's going to at least have those core fundamental components and inputs and actions across all those different canvases.
Gotcha.
I think that's super powerful. And so, you know, one of the, we use it in a variety of different ways within Teams. So as I mentioned earlier, your bot could send an adaptive card as a response to user interaction. You can also use the more structured messaging extensions to go perform a search and return an adaptive card. Another new, more of a sneak peek, but it's a feature that's going to be coming pretty soon, is this concept of a task module in Teams. So this is a new feature that we've been working on for a while, and it's really in response to any scenario where you want to have the user complete a slightly more complex task in situ within Teams, but not necessarily have to do a bunch of natural language back and forth.
Gotcha.
You don't want them to necessarily go to a tab. So, you know, give you an example. Let's say you are creating, filing a bug. You know, so you're in a conversation, you're in a channel, you want to file a bug. Now, historically, if you wanted to do that, you could leave Teams, you could go to the browser, create your bug, and paste a link. You could go and chat with a bot to go create a bug, but you know, sometimes that's not the best workflow for your average user to have to go through a bunch of these steps. You could potentially go into a tab, but again, that's, you know, that's a, sort of still a navigation.
Sure.
So the idea of the task module is open up basically a modal dialogue that feels directly, deeply integrated within Teams that allows you to go perform your custom actions within that, that interface. And so as a developer, you can customize whatever functionality you want within that, that pop-up. And so the way, one of the ways we use adaptive cards is that you can actually bind an adaptive card to what shows up within that task module. So, you know, going back to the bug example, if filling out a bug is nothing more than a set of form inputs, the name of the bug, brief description, you know, what's the severity or priority of it, all of those could be achieved and expressed through an adaptive card JSON. So you can actually pop up one of these modal dialogue task canvas task modules within Teams, have the user complete that task, do it within inside an adaptive card, and then, you know, complete that interaction entirely within there. So, you know, within Teams, we actually use adaptive as kind of a very core building block of the sort of rich canvas that we have. And we use it in a variety of different ways in the platform.
Gotcha. That's really cool because, it, you know, it goes back to that comment I made earlier about it's not just all about bots, right? You've got to somehow, sometimes you've got to have a bit of a richer interface sometimes. And so
that's right.
That's a nice halfway point between natural language and a whole tab or getting out to a browser or whatever. And I assume things like that, thinking about scenarios around across mobile and how that works across different form factors, and that'll be really nice. The interesting thing on adaptive cards, you know, some people say, it's like, why don't you just send HTML and CSS?
Right.
And it's like, please, no.
Yeah.
Like, everybody who's dealt with rendering knows that that doesn't work very well. So,
yeah,
I liked your comment about that it's not just about how it looks, it's about what it does and how it functions.
That's right.
And then the individual sort of context and form factor and the client that you're using really takes a lot of control over, like, is the button like this wide or that wide? Or, you know, is the card this tall or that tall? You know,
it,
so
it's fascinating if you think about it, like, you know, how long have we been talking about XAML?
Right.
And like this whole notion of, you know, XML XML forms for different data binding types. I remember working on some of these related type things a very, very long time ago. But what I think is fascinating about adaptive cards and some of the stuff that's happening in messaging is it's creatively trying to solve a problem, which is I'm fundamentally dealing with presentation UI that I'm showing in the context of a conversation that inherently needs to be able to get presented at some point down to some reduced form.
Right.
So it's not even just a, can you do the CSS, but it's like, can you re-show this in a different form altogether that's still oriented, and quickly, oriented around messaging, and so it's a very pragmatic approach, I think, to it, as opposed to then saying, can we craft a cross-device, cross-platform XML representation for form rendering that then does dynamic data binding with... It's like, okay,
we've had a lot of layout engines.
We've had a lot of layout engines and a lot of form definitions.
Quirks,
and, yeah, so it's a, I find it fascinating, but it's I think, a great example of where, you know, we've tried to be, I think, very collaborative in coming up with this stuff, right? So it wasn't one person came up with it and then everybody was forced to go do it. It was, you know, us working together across a bunch of different groups to say, like, okay, what are these problems we're trying to solve and how do we do that?
Yeah, and it's nice to see that it's very much a not just Microsoft model as well. You know, like adaptivecards.io, there's a bunch of partners up there that are also doing it, like Kick Messenger and all that sort of stuff. And I think that'll really help with adoption and getting people on board. there's a ton of new stuff in Teams. Obviously, Teams is super hot right now and probably will continue that way for the next wee while. And it's obvious Microsoft's heading in this direction with regards to Skype and Skype for Business and where all the sort of the eggs are going, so to speak, all the investments are being made. For those devs that are stuck on-prem and that are used to building stuff with Skype for Business and the client and all that sort of stuff, you guys working on stuff to sort of bring them along for the ride, so to speak?
Never.
Give them a nice sort of little, give them a sort of a bridge to the other side of the lake kind of thing? Or is it just so new that that's just super hard to do?
You know, I would say it's a combination of things. On the one hand, you know, we have a new Skype for Business server release coming out this fall, Skype for Business Server 2019. Mm-hmm. That's very much a forward-looking release. So there's some things that we've talked about with regards to like integration with Exchange for Unified Messaging, where we think that there's an opportunity to now start moving some of those workloads to the cloud.
Gotcha.
So you might even still be running server, but you could then say, hey, yeah, but in fact, I've got Exchange in the cloud.
This bit goes over there.
So my voicemail goes up to here, but I'm, you know, my voice infrastructure still stays down here. And so there's a few instances where we're looking at that. Admin console is another sort of place that we're looking at there. So it's meant to be a, hey, this is a stepping stone for you as you're sort of thinking about your journey to the cloud. But we also recognize that, I had to laugh at your stuck comment, that, you know, moving some of this voice infrastructure stuff definitely takes time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we recognize that for some of these organizations, you know, it's definitely going to be a 3 to 5 year kind of journey for them to, even if they're excited about it, want to do it, it might still take them time. If you're Chevron or you're some large company, you know, you've got oil rigs.
It's tough to flip a whole company over.
Right? Like, when am I going to get Larry to go out to the oil rig and, like, flip out my Skype for Business server and move the WAN over?
I've got my helicopter ticket booked already.
Right? Like, so, you know, so I think they're dealing with some of those types of problems. So, yeah, we're trying to help bridge them with that. I think the other side of this, though, is that we're definitely not going to slow down with Teams. Like, Teams is moving very, very quickly. It's moving very quickly intentionally because it is really about just driving that innovation as quickly as possible. And I, you know, I think one of the things that we talk about, but I don't know if people fully grok it yet. I've had a bunch of conversations with people at the event here and just in the last week or so where they're like, you guys have moved really fast with Teams. So, like, when you guys came out, and I was like, okay, yeah, fine. We'll see where you're at. Maybe you get another couple of features in the next year. And they look at it, they're just blown away with how much stuff we've done. And I think that's a testament to the team. I think it's a testament to the leadership of the team. But I think it's also a testament to the rest of the organization in office, right? Because really, we're building on top of what the rest of the organization is doing. So I think people have this kind of, often have this, I'll say, a misperception of Office as being kind of this legacy or kind of old school thing. A lot of people are still using Office 2010 or whatever. There's some amazing work that's being done across the org. And the only reason Teams is able to go even as fast as it is is because the rest of the org is doing great work and building things like Graph and, you know, building all these things together. So that's just more of a little pitch, I guess. But it's, I think, an incredibly important aspect of how we're helping people move forward and how we're helping to give them incentive to make the jump. Because sometimes when you're making the jump, it is a little bit of a bet, right? Like, is it going to be worth it for me to go through all this pain? And so when you look at the stuff we showed at the keynote, right? Translation, transcription, face recognition, like, people go like that. In a lot of cases, it seems sci-fi. But ultimately, what we're trying to make the case for is there's a better way to do things. And if you make the jump, it's going to be worth your time. Right? So I think that's the sort of the two sides of the pitch that I would give for people that are in that experience now, which is, we'll give you the stepping stones, but we really want you to be courageous and think about how you can get and join us as we're sort of really innovating on these things.
Gotcha. No, that's very exciting stuff. And you're absolutely right. It has moved super fast. Like you said, it was only first birthday not so long ago.
March.
Yep,
and if you look at what launched and with Teams, I think actually when it launched, everybody was suitably impressed. So there's not a lot of services that you can honestly say that about.
Yeah.
And that, you know, first version is usually not the bare minimum, but not far off it, right? And Teams launched with great support on a bunch of different devices, clients for iOS and Android and all that sort of stuff. Then along, external sharing came along and a bunch of external stuff. Then all the meetings pieces. And what made me flip from Skype for Business for external meetings to Teams was, A, when I figured out how to invite external people to them, but also that the experience for the external users was just better. And the end user experience was just a ton better. And it just seemed to work. I didn't pay the Skype tax up front, right? And and meetings worked with people that didn't weren't using Skype, weren't using Teams, and they could join.
I can't tell you how many times I hear that same feedback. People are like, "It was so weird. We had the Teams meeting and like
clicked a button,
it just kind of worked."
You got to trust it, right? And you just won't use it if you can't trust it. Yeah. And so, yeah, the experience was really good, and it's continued to be. And so, that's what flipped me for meetings for
nice.
Sure. Yeah, so, Teams is, it's come a really long way in a short period of time.
Teams has always been, since the very early days, and I've been on the team for 2.5 years, and so it's always been user experience centric first, and really the obsession over designing, building something that was really for the end user, but of course also something that IT pro could trust and could rely on for their organization. I think we've done a great job in sort of balancing both of those needs and delivering something that ultimately is going to people actually want to use. They enjoy using it on a regular basis.
Yeah. Here's a bit of a silly observation from my point of view. I think Teams is the sleeper agent for getting Google into the enterprise with Electron, with the Chrome engine. So
that's the side hustle.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm not sure if this is some sort of devious ploy by Larry and Sergey, but it's probably going to be the most used Chrome application in the enterprise, or Chrome-based sort of stuff in the enterprise in the next wee while. So that's silly.
We'll see how the stuff goes. I think from a Win 10 perspective, we're excited about the work we're doing with the Progressive Web App how that comes together. So
yeah, very nice.
Hopefully, we put a cap at least on this.
Yeah, sure. No, I'm only being silly. Hey, so before we finish up, we like to ask our guests, if you spent a week sitting on the side of a lake or somewhere where your happy place is, and there's been something on your to-do list for a really long time that you just don't quite seem to get to learn about or read about or try or do or learn or what have you, what would you spend that week figuring out, learning, and not being interrupted while you do it? Larry?
Yeah, I'll in the very brief time I've had to think about this.
Sorry to put you on the spot. Yeah.
No worries. Meditation is actually on my list. So I've had that on my list for a couple of years. And, I tried a couple times where I just sat there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I quite got to nirvana. So, but figuring out the right breathing exercises to...
Seattle already. We have nirvana, right? They came from here.
Not if you have to go over the 520 bridge.
Fair.
Right.
But that's always been on my list and just using it as a way of kind of decompressing. So that's something I would love to get like a short book on where I could just kind of read it in a few hours and pick up the basics. So,
very cool.
So maybe when build is done and things settle down a little bit.
It's kind of interesting that you can't get the time to learn about relaxation and meditation because you're not relaxed. Right. You're so busy.
There's an irony in there.
There's definitely. So Andrew, how about you?
I'm going to cheat. I'm going to say there's probably two. I studied cognitive science when I was in college many years ago. And I just, looking out over the last year, the landscape has changed so drastically. And I just feel like I've had zero chance to really dig in and understand some of these new ML models and how all these things come together. Now that's a very tech answer. And I would probably spend maybe a day or two just trying to get up to speed on that. The thing that was more in my happy place, so I'm a musician, I record a bunch of stuff at home and release things on the store and stuff. And, there's been this sort of sea change in the last couple of years where musicians are starting to use a lot more samplers where they're doing live looping on stage. Mm-hmm. And it takes the right setup.
Right.
And so there's all this new gear out here for trying to do all these things, and you see all these people doing all these
videos
of themselves. Yeah, and so I'm still doing the old school way, right? It's yes, I'm doing multi-track, whatever, but I would love to just get a week to just get the gear and figure out how I can do all that stuff. Because I'm basically doing it now. I just do it sort of
in a different process.
In a different process. Yeah, and I would like to be able to sort of do that stuff more live. So that would be my I think, my guilty pleasure for the week.
Very cool.
For the other 5 days.
Oh, right. I'm jealous. I got absolutely no musical genes in my family. So I admire anybody that can play an instrument for sure.
Yeah. No, it's good stuff. That doesn't make a lot of money if you're not actually going out and gigging.
Right,
gotcha.
I had an album I pushed out on all the various storefronts and everything like that. But streaming, you make ¾ of a penny. So I think in a year I've made $10, $11.
Gotcha. Well, we have a famous Microsoftie in the SharePoint space who does the theme music for our podcast, a guy called Keith Ritchie, who you need to go check out on iTunes and all that sort of stuff. So
nice.
Speaking of struggling musicians and all of those sorts of things. But we'll look for your tour dates at CenturyLink.
Oh, there you go.
Coming up soon.
With my self-looping stuff.
That's right, yeah. I look forward to it. Hey, well, thank you both very much for coming on the show. I know our listeners would have found this fascinating, hearing about the dev side of teams and what you guys are investing in moving forward. I know tons of people are thinking about it and trying to figure out where they're going and how they're going to build solutions with this and leverage it in their organizations and things. So really appreciate you coming on the show and giving us an update on where things are heading with teams. And we look forward to seeing it all sort of play out over the next wee while.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thanks again.
Thanks for having us.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.